More kids maltreated. Hurricane names affect the way we respond to them. What's the deal with MERS? And we'll visit with our good friend Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center on the risk factors for elderly patients and how they encounter more poisonings and overdoses than we might think. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MediCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome you to this episode this week. First up in this week's EMS news, we're going to be looking at a study that says that child mistreatment and abuse is probably more prevalent than we might like to admit, and what we can do about it. Then, in this week's special tip of the week, we have Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center back as she talks with us about the unique challenges faced by poisonings in elderly patients. What can we do to reduce the risks for this frail EMS patient population? That's all coming up later on in this week's episode of the MedicCast. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you are checking out the links and additional information available for you over at the MedicCast blog, over at MedicCast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Click that link, and that'll take you right to the most recent episode. And you can scroll down there to find any previous episode you might be looking for. There's also a search box there, so you can look there if you're looking for something in particular. But take some time and make sure you get the follow-up on the information you hear me talk about on the show and understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, make sure you do so. I love to hear from you. You can email me directly at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with comments or questions on the show, suggestions for future episodes. Maybe you have a link to a news item you'd like to share. Whatever you do, I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I will get back to you as well, so keep them coming. Also, don't forget all of you smartphone users out there. If you haven't got the free MedicCast app yet in your device's store, go get it, and it's a great way to get the show each week. That's enough contact information. Let's go ahead and get on into this week's show, coming right up. First up in the news this week is a rather alarming report from a Yale University study. According to the article, 1 in 8 U.S. children will be subjected to some form of maltreatment by the time they reach adulthood. This estimate is larger than current reported percentages around the country. Sociologist Christopher Wildman reports that this is probably something that is an estimate based on confirmed cases, and we probably are lowballing the numbers of children at risk. It underlines the need for us as paramedics and EMTs and caregivers of all kind to be more vigilant and make sure we are assessing our patients for risk for abuse. The study looked at data on 5.7 million U.S. kids with reports confirming they'd been mistreated in some way between 2004 and 2011. Based on these rates, this means 12.5%, 1 out of every 8 kids, may experience maltreatment by the age of 18. For some minorities, this means that they are more likely to be mistreated as graduate from college. We can work on this problem by working around safety and security of our young patients, asking them, do they feel safe? Asking them if they are safe in their home. Remember, you're not just ethically responsible to report child abuse and neglect. We are required to report suspicions of child abuse and neglect. Take this responsibility seriously. Make an effort to see if your younger patients are safe in their homes and their communities. According to CDC data, most child victims are maltreated by a parent, accounting for more than 80% of the cases reported. This is followed by other relatives and then unmarried partners of parents. So be aware. Keep your eyes open to what is often right in front of you. Next up is an interesting article I found over at emsworld.com on preparedness and the way we name big storms. A recent study of named hurricanes found that hurricanes with women's names are deadlier than those named with male names. The authors of the study proposed that this is because the female names are viewed as less threatening, and so people don't prepare as thoroughly or heed warnings as often of officials. The study was presented recently at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The Atlantic hurricane season just started back on June 1st recently here, and behavioral scientists at the University of Illinois interviewed 1,000 test subjects and found that people were more likely to evacuate a storm with a masculine sounding name than a feminine name. They used similar names like Christopher and Christina, or Victor or Victoria, and Alexander or Alexandra to conduct the surveys. They surmised that people seek meaning in communication many different ways, and that they assign meaning to something even if it doesn't make sense or it's not the intention to assign meaning to it. Over the course of the surveys, the respondents rated female-named storms as less scary or milder. Some weather and disaster experts were skeptical, of course, but they looked at the data and the findings, and they've come around. Now, this means that a female-named storm, we could have more people to rescue, right? So this is information we probably need to have in our back pocket, and when there is a female-named storm threatening your community, make sure you get more warnings out than you normally would. Do more to communicate to them the danger that's impending. I'll keep following up on this and other stories as we progress through the summer storm season, and we'll see if research bears that out for this year's storms. Finally, I thought I'd take a brief look at the recently reported cases of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. You may have heard about this in the news in recent weeks after a MERS outbreak spread in a limited way to some parts of the U.S. Now, as usual, my goal is to break through the hype and find out what's really going on. I went to the CDC site and found a wealth of information there. MERS is caused by a coronavirus, and according to the CDC, most infected people may develop severe respiratory symptoms, and 30% of them will die. Now, until recently, the viral outbreaks had been limited to the Arabian Peninsula and neighboring countries. On May 2nd, though, there was a confirmed MERS case here in the U.S., followed quickly on May 11th with a second case. Both individuals were business travelers who'd recently returned from the Middle East. The two cases were not linked to each other in any way, and both have fully recovered, thankfully. There were also some instances of a second case of potential spread to healthcare workers here in the U.S. who came in contact with them. These cases have also resolved with mild symptoms and no deaths. In response, though, the CDC released the following statement, quote, "The MERS situation in the U.S. represents a very low risk to the general public of this country. CDC and other public health partners continue to investigate and respond to the changing situation to prevent the spread of MERS coronavirus in the U.S., and we recognize the potential for MERS coronavirus to spread further and cause more cases globally in the future." From all the information, the MERS virus doesn't transmit very easily from person to person, and standard precautions, including good hand washing habits, should provide good protection for you. I'll continue to follow this story and others like it, and work to present you and the rest of the EMS community a voice of clarity in the midst of media hype that so often accompanies these types of outbreaks. This week on the Tip of the Week, we have another visit with our good friend, Lisa Booz, from the Maryland Poison Center. Lisa visits us from time to time to look at different things, and this time around we're looking at risks for our elderly community members with poisonings and accidental drug overdoses. These are often a population that gets overlooked when we think about poisonings. Seniors are at risk for drug interactions, adverse drug events, intentional and unintentional overdoses, drug abuse, and product misuse. Calls to poison centers involving people over the age of 60 account for about 7% of these calls, but make up 23% of fatalities. Check out what Lisa has to say about this special at-risk population. Welcome back to another segment here of our Tox Tidbits, our toxicology segments here on the show. And I'm excited to have Lisa Booz back from the Maryland Poison Center. Lisa, tell us a little bit about what you have going on this time around.
Well, Jamie, when we think about poisonings, I think most people think about small children, you know, toddlers that get into things. And in fact, when we go and do education programs, or we go to various venues, senior centers, for example. We get a lot of people that say, I don't need the poison center number. I don't have small children around. But people forget that seniors in particular, people who are elderly, people who we call older adults, which I soon will find myself in that category, unfortunately, but seniors are at big risk for poisonings. They're at risk for drug interactions, adverse drug events, intentional and unintentional overdoses, drug abuse even. We see even senior citizens that have drug abuse problems, and also just general product misuse. Calls to poison centers involving people over the age of 60 account for about 7% of all calls, but they make up about 23% of fatalities. So that kind of brings it home as far as how serious some of these cases can be. There's a much higher rate of therapeutic errors and also adverse drug effects in the age group, and they're much more likely to be managed in a healthcare facility than those in any other age group, including children. So we need to remember first that there are physiologic differences in older adults that put them at higher risk. When it comes to drugs, very few are tested on older adults. You know, they're tested on normally healthy adults, young adults, middle-aged adults, but not older adults. And so there's very little really to guide dosing in older adults. The older you get, the more likely that your renal function will decline, and that can cause an accumulation of drugs like lithium, digoxin, metformin, aspirin in older adults. They get much higher blood levels of these drugs if they have renal function or kidney function that's not great. Older adults also have an increased sensitivity to adverse effects of drugs. For example, benzodiazepines, opioids, and even antihypertensives can cause adverse effects that can lead to falls and also confusion. As we age, our eyesight worsens, and that can cause difficulty in reading medicine labels and also labels on household products. And so that can lead to errors in taking medicines and also misuse of products. And then we have memory impairment in some older adults, and that can also lead to taking medicines incorrectly. People over the age of 65 account for 13% of the United States population, but they take more than one-third of all prescription and over-the-counter medications. So there's a much bigger risk of adverse events and drug interactions. 50% of seniors take three or more prescription drugs, and if you look at the average 75-year-old, they'll take 8 drugs daily. Again, as you increase the number of drugs, higher chance of drug interactions and adverse drug events. Older adults are twice as likely to go to an emergency department for an adverse drug event, and they're 7 times more likely to be admitted, and that's compared to those between the ages of 50 and 64. So once you hit that age of about 65, you have a much greater chance of being hospitalized due to an adverse drug event. Some of the drugs that more commonly are seen in these emergency hospitalizations are warfarin, which is an anticoagulant, insulin, oral antiplatelets, and also oral hypoglycemics, or drugs that are used for diabetes. Other drugs that we see commonly involved in poisonings that are called into poison centers with the elderly include acetaminophen, opioid analgesics, benzodiazepines, antipsychotics, cardiovascular drugs like the calcium channel blockers and beta blockers, and also over-the-counter drugs that contain antihistamines. Now, some of these drugs, like benzodiazepines and even antihistamines, appear on lists of drugs to avoid prescribing to older adults or to avoid recommending to older adults. One out of every 7 elderly patients that's treated with a benzodiazepine will have an adverse effect. It might be CNS depression, so they might be tired and drowsy. They may develop respiratory depression. They may develop withdrawal if they stop taking the drug, and also injuries due to falls. Opioid analgesics, another group of drugs that we are concerned about, are often prescribed to older adults for pain and maybe in inappropriate doses for their age. There are a lot of reports of respiratory depression and also deaths due to the opioid analgesics. It's most likely to occur, if there are problems, most likely to occur within 24 to 72 hours of starting the drug with doses that are too high, or after a dose that's increased too rapidly, or when switching from one opioid to another. It's really tricky to switch somebody from one opioid to another and hit the correct dose. Respiratory depression can also occur when an opioid is prescribed to somebody taking another medication that might be additive, like maybe a benzodiazepine. what we usually recommend is that prescribers start low and go slow, especially in elderly patients. And try to avoid opioid analgesics if you can in elderly patients. Calcium channel blockers are often prescribed for older adults, and they're often in combination with beta blockers. There's a really low margin of safety with these drugs. They're very good drugs for treating hypertension and other disorders, but there's a low margin of safety, and in some cases, even a double dose is cause for concern. You can get significant hypotension and bradycardia, and with drugs like verapamil and diltiazem, you can get an alteration in cardiac conduction also. The number of patients being diagnosed with diabetes has grown dramatically over the past decade or so, and we expect that to climb in the future. Many are older adults, and they're prescribed insulin. And that presents a particular problem in that people take more than one type of insulin at different times of the day and in different doses quite frequently. A common call that poison centers get involves an elderly patient who's given himself or herself the wrong dose or the wrong type of insulin. They just get it mixed up. Calls involving insulin errors increased 495% just between the years 2000 and 2009. That's calls to poison centers. Many of the cases are handled at home with a poison specialist advising the patient to eat and drink. And we also advise that they check their blood glucose at intervals corresponding to the duration of the insulin. And then we often call back. We have the patient call us or we call back to talk to them to check on how they're feeling, if they're eating, and also what their glucose readings are. But if we are concerned about the dose, then we do recommend that they go into the emergency department. All healthcare professionals, and whether you're an EMS provider, nurse, physician, pharmacist, any healthcare professional, we should all make an attempt to help prevent poisonings involving senior citizens. We need to encourage them to put on glasses. You wouldn't think you need to do that, but you do. Encourage them to put on glasses. Encourage them to read labels. Keep updated lists of their medicines. Know how to take their medicines, or if they're having trouble with that, have a family member do it. Discard old and expired drugs, and keep the poison center phone number handy so that they can call for help. Poison centers have phone stickers, we have magnets, brochures, all of these things that you can give to your patients, particularly elderly patients. Wouldn't it be great if every EMS provider left a poison center phone sticker at the home of an elderly patient, or if every emergency department patient was given a poison center magnet when they're discharged? We encourage that, and we're there to work with you to help prevent these poisonings.
That's great, Lisa. And that phone number again?
1-800-222-1222.
And it's something just, you know, I have it programmed into my phone. You should all have it programmed in your phone. And of course, not all, you know, you don't necessarily take orders, but it's a great way to get information and give you a direction for treatment and consult with, your physicians or your medical control.
Exactly. And again, in elderly patients, we are concerned about even small doses of some of these drugs because they do accumulate and they do have exaggerated responses. We get calls all the time about people who have forgotten and taken a double dose of their medicine. And a lot of healthcare providers say, well, it's just a double dose. We don't have to worry about that. But we do have to worry about it. You know, we do see significant toxicity. So we do want to make sure that you call the poison center to check on things like that. You might be surprised what might be toxic in your patient.
Yeah, I could see, you know, the patient with presenting with some unusual symptoms and unknown problems, but you see that issue of polypharmacy, they're taking a whole boatload of medicines. It might be worthwhile making a call to the poison center to see if their symptoms relate to something they're taking.
That's right. We can help you with drug interactions. We can help you with adverse drug events, side effects of drugs. We can help you assess the patient and see if it is the drug that's causing it. And we do that quite frequently. We do get a lot of calls like that from EMS providers as well as emergency department staff.
Well, Lisa, thanks a lot, and we'll look forward to having you on again in a future episode.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate it.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle Podmedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/mediccast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.